Grifters, this is your grim narrator, Alistair Brimstone, here once again to open the gates to the graveyard. On tonight's episode, your diabolical duo, Chainsaw Paul and Wolfman Menno, take a look at the film, The Autopsy of Jane Doe, from 2016, starring Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch. Also, there's some horror remakes making their way out of the fiery pit in our news segment. Your horror hosts do a mini spoiler-free review of the short film Box. So turn the lights down low and welcome to Podcast from the Crypt.
We begin with a reign of terror, a few murders here and there.
Do you know what the most frightening thing in the world is?
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Why are you doing this?
Death has come to your little town.
Your suffering will be legendary, even in hell.
It's alive!
I want to hear you scream.
Welcome back, Cryptsters. Welcome back to another episode of Podcast from the Crypt. I am your horror host, Chainsaw Paul. And with me is the ever-lovely Wolfman Memo.
What's up, Cryptsters?
Yeah, we got him back on Skype. This goddamn quarantine. This goddamn delay.
But we gotta do what we gotta do.
So that was our brand new theme song, Fresh Out of the Grave, made especially for us in the show by the super talented music producer, The Third. And it's stylized as The TH3RD, The Third. We told him we wanted something similar to the theme we were using, and he sent us back some fucking dope, creepy music that sent chills down my spine. It was exactly what I was thinking of. The drums are so hard and the strings are psycho levels of eerie. So if there's any Cryptsters out there that need some dope music for their project, podcast, movies, whatever, hit up The Third on his Twitter. That's at DMMusic3RD. Also, while you're there, visit his SoundCloud page with the link in his bio to check out his latest shit.
Yeah, and Chainsaw Paul and the Wolfman both want to thank him for, all he did to make this new theme song happen.
Yeah, definitely, man. I was so super stoked. All right, Wolfman, what have you been up to?
I haven't really been, it's like everybody else, if you can work, then work, and then go back home and just been like, trying to do some audiobooks, but not, really getting too far on them because of other stuff distracting me.
Yeah.
And then, my usual distractions of watching movies or cartoons. That's all I've been doing. I was listening to just some Stephen King ones. I started one of The Dark Half, which I got the movie, and I got the book. But I was like, all right, let me listen to the audiobook. I only probably got, maybe like not even a third of the way through. And then I checked out The Institute before. And that's one of his newer novels, and I'm probably gonna have to check that one out once again, because I think that expires maybe by tomorrow or the next day.
Oh shit!
And I was like, okay, like where was I? Because like the last time was maybe about 2-3 months ago that I was listening to it, so I was trying to figure out like what happened before and what characters were what. So yeah, it's been a while. So I was like, okay, well I'll just have to maybe start over on those again at some point. Yeah, or just do it old school and just read, since I have the books. So, what have you been up to, Paul?
Not a whole hell of a lot, man. Just fucking movies, video games, a lot of the older games that I have.
So I think I did something kind of like that, not with games, but...
with masturbating. You know what?
With games, too. No, like with some games. I have a Nintendo that's, those little mini ones.
Yeah.
It has, I guess, some games built in it. So I was playing some games, and some of them I haven't passed before, and then I was like, oh, crap. I was kind of looking up, kind of cheating a little bit, like, all right, how do I get this? Because I was like, I don't want to play, like, forever like I did when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I guess that's it for now. And then, there's other games there, but I was like, I'll get to those later.
Awesome. I did want to mention, And we've been talking about it here and there on the show. The Resident Evil 3 remake came out, and what was it, like a week ago, I actually played the demo. And this shit is dope. It's fucking freaky as any other Resident Evil. The graphics look amazing. Like, it looks even better than the Resident Evil 2 remake. Cryptids, go out and play that motherfucker, Resident Evil 3 remake. Let us know what you think about it.
So Chainsaw, you got some news for us?
Yeah, I got some fucking news for you, Wolfman. Here's some fucking news. All right, yeah. I'll take over on the news front, since Wolfman didn't want to do shit and look up anything. Apparently, there's a lot of horror remakes going to be coming out, and these are confirmed ones, so I was like, oh, okay, that's worth mentioning. A few of them kind of pissed me off, and then a few of them I kind of forgot. But that's me, you know, I suck. Yeah, the first one up, we have the Hellraiser remake. And this one actually kind of pissed me off a little bit. At first, when I first heard about it, I was like, what? Come on, man. You can't remake Hellraiser. I don't think it's as amazing as Wolfman here, but I do like it a lot, and I don't think that it needs to be remade. But then I was looking more into it, and the director attached to it actually intrigued me a little bit. David Bruckner. Yeah, I didn't recognize his name at first, but as I was reading a little bit more about it, he directed The Ritual on Netflix, and I fucking love that movie. I love that movie. And he also did another movie that I haven't seen, but apparently it's really good. It's Night House. Have you seen that one, Wolfman?
Nah, I haven't seen Night House, and I got to rewatch The Ritual.
Yeah, The Ritual.
And when you mentioned David Bruckner, I was like, David Bruckner? I don't know who David Bruckner is.
Yeah, I didn't. I like I said, the name didn't ring a bell, but the movies did for sure. And he also did a couple of segments on VHS. I know you've seen that, right?
And I like VHS. Is it from the original?
Yeah. You know, I remember watching it, and I liked it well enough. But the other one that he did a couple of segments for was Southbound, and I loved that fucking film. That shit's good stuff. I definitely want to do that on the show one of these days. The only problem is getting the right person to play Pinhead.
They're going to have to bring old Doug Bradley back, man.
You know, if he'll do it, that's the only way it's going to come out right, honestly.
Yeah, if he came back, I might have to hop aboard, because right now I'm still watching it from ashore, man, because I'm not a traitor.
I don't have high hopes for it, but, you know, just with the director attached, I think if he brings that style and, you know, for the things that he's done that I've seen, I like a lot. Mm-hmm. So it has potential. It's just like with that Pinhead, you got to get the right actor to play Pinhead. If not Doug Bradley, then who? I can't think of anybody. And yeah, it might not work just because of that. His
performance, man.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, I hear you like on it. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm 100% closed on it. I mean, with the material that's in there, like, I love the material in it, like, from the original. Of course, I love the original from, we already did the review on it. But with the material that's in the book and in the movie, it's, you know, it's so much horror intrigue in it that if it's done right, you know, maybe I'll jump on board if it's done right. We'll see.
You know, if they get the right person to play Pinhead and they stick to the source material, like you're saying, like, don't deviate too much, you know, make it a little bit different. But I want to
hopefully change up some stuff. Yeah,
change up some stuff. But basically, I want them to stick to the original movie. You know, I think that's the only way it's going to work.
It's going to be kind of hard too, because there's other characters that were done well too. I mean, Kirsty, her dad, Julia, Uncle Frank. Man, you got to have some people that hit those parts right, because on the original, they were done well.
Yeah, they were, but at the same time, I think that it would be easier to find people to replace those actors in those characters than it would be for Pinhead and Doug Bradley, you know what
for
I mean?
For sure, but I mean, yeah, but I'm just saying that those characters, that they have to bring it like those other ones brought it, you know, those actors.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but for sure, Pinhead's got to be on point. That's why you got to bring Doug back.
If they can get Doug back, and if they go all out on this shit, production value, script, acting, everything just all out, then I can see it doing well. If they try to half-ass it, it's not going to at all.
It's kind of like when they redid Nightmare on Elm Street, and then, I mean, I thought that actor had a shot, but you, like you said, they kind of screwed him, especially with the makeup. Makeup kind of threw everybody off.
Yeah, exactly. We can't have any of that kind of bullshit going on, so, you know, we'll see. But apparently, you know, this remake's been talked about for a while now.
You know what? I would like if they had some more Cenobites in the ones that we had before, maybe, but like other ones as well, that maybe you see like a little glimpse of the hell that they come from.
Yeah.
And you can see more different Cenobites, like how we've seen in different action figures.
Yeah, for sure.
Some kind of stuff like that.
For sure. That's where they can deviate from the original movie. You know, that's where they can change it up a little bit by adding stuff instead of taking it away.
Yeah, I'd be like, I'm on board with that.
So, you know, whoever's making the movie, hopefully they're listening to this and jotting down our ideas. Like, you know what? Those fuckers are right.
They're like, or they're like, we already thought of it.
They're like, you know, we're going to get Busta Rhymes in this motherfucker, but maybe they won't like that.
Oh, shit. they heard of us talking about Busta Rhymes showing up on Halloween.
Yeah.
Again.
The next one, I want to hear Wolfman's thoughts about this, because I know he's a big Stephen King fan. Salem's Lot. And this one's coming to the big screen.
Whoa. Okay. I'm just wondering if it's going to all be in one movie, or if they're going to kind of do it in two parts. Because with the material that's there, if it's done right, it could be a long movie, because the book's pretty thick. I don't know if it's going to be one or two parts on it. Does it say?
You know what? I'm thinking that it's going to be a two-part thing, because the director, he actually wrote the screenplays for both chapters of it, and he's writing the screenplay for this one too. So, you know, and that those were in two chapters, two movies. So I'm thinking that this is going to be the same. I think it'll be quality, man, with him attached. You know, the It movies were great.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's good too, because the book's really good. It's just, you know, like when you watch the miniseries was pretty good too, but there could have been some stuff. I mean, it doesn't hold up time-wise.
No, it does not.
when it was done back in the 80s, you know, it was done well. Like, it was good for its time and for it being TV. You know, it was what it was back then. Like, you didn't have stuff like you have now. Like, TV stuff now, it's kind of like movie quality. Back then, you didn't have all that stuff.
So, yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking it's going to be really good, especially that it's being a film. Hopefully, they do it right. And I hope that they have, like, more backstory. Like, because with the house in which the vampire goes into, like, that house has a history on its own as well. So I'm hoping they hit up on that history, because kind of don't mention it too much on, you know, the TV series that came out. Because that house had, like, some evil things going on before it, and the owner was evil before, too.
Yeah, they could definitely touch on some of that shit.
Yeah, and they did mention that stuff. I mean, like how you said, you didn't watch Castle Rock. They touched on the second season. So it kind of had a little bit, you know, they talked about the Marston house, which shows up on there, and you do get some evil stuff going on, and they touch a little bit about the history, but not too much. So I'm hoping that on the movie they get more into detail about that stuff.
Yeah, that would be really cool. And another thing I fucking almost failed to mention, you know, because Chainsaw Paul fucking sucks, James Wan is attached to produce. So if he actually has involvement with it, then I have real high hopes for this shit. If it's just him putting his name on it, just for the sake of putting his name on it, then I don't know. But if he has some involvement and kind of like guiding the director, then this shit's going to be fucking amazing.
I hope so. And I'll see what Stephen King has to say when he posts something on it at some point, hopefully.
So look for that shit sometime in the future. You know, not right now, because nobody's making shit. All right, so the third remake we have up This one was like, what the fuck? What are they thinking? Okay, they're fucking remaking The Others, the Nicole Kidman movie from 2001. I was talking to Wolfman before we started recording, and I was comparing it to, like, remaking The Exorcist or The Sixth Sense. Like, you just don't do that and kind of shit.
Or you said Jaws as well.
Yeah, or Jaws. You know, you just don't do that shit. No way. There's no way this is going to work. And it pisses me off that they're doing it. And I'm not one of those people that, like, hate remakes. Like, I'm usually on board unless, you know, until I see it and, okay, that's shit or that's fucking amazing. I don't knock them just because they're remakes. You know, they could be done well. But this one right here is like, there's no way this shit's going to work. I'm not going to like it. I fucking love The Others. It was such a good movie, done so well. And that twist is what gets you. And if you know, most people already fucking know the twist. So it's like, they would have to do something completely different. And then it's not even going to be the same movie. It's not going to be The Others.
Yeah, I don't think it would make any sense if they do something different. With the twist, you know, and it being that way, that's why the title even makes sense, The Others. And then let's say a twist, and then it's where nothing happens that same way, then how would it make sense?
Exactly. It just won't. It won't even feel like the same movie at all. Like, what's the fucking point? It would be the Black Christmas 2019 all over again.
Yeah, with us, like, this seeing the Others a little bit, I mean, I really didn't say, you know, like I said, the twist or whatever. I'm mentioning what it is because maybe at some point we might review it, at, you know, in the future.
Oh, we will for sure. But at the same time, you know, like, I can't imagine anybody's not seen this movie. They did say they're trying to modernize the film and bring it into, like, what's going on right now, especially with the quarantine and being stuck in a house and, you know, being worried about your loved ones and shit. Okay, you know, let's play on that shit. And that makes me think this was like a last minute decision to do this. I'm not on board, I'll tell you right now. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I don't think it's intriguing me at all. And one of the things that I liked about The Others was how it was done with that time period kind of stuff going on right there. And it looked good. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The atmosphere and the like you said, the time period, it took place in 1945, and just having that atmosphere and the surroundings and all that and being in that time, it just, that's what added to the movie. And for them to bring it up to nowadays, I'm like, I'm just not interested at all. This isn't going to work.
You know, like how you mentioned it, that one, and then you kind of compared it to the Black Christmas 2019.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of going to kill it, and I kill the one that you like, that other Black Christmas. I don't know if it was 2004 or when it was made.
2006.
2006. That one's kind of like the original Black Christmas being so done so well. And even though it was like older, it still held up and it was good. And then you go to the other one and they spilled out more stuff to us where it's like, nah, we didn't have to throw all that stuff in there. And it kind of ruined the movie for me.
Yeah, for sure. I get what you're saying, but I was bringing up the comparison because Black Christmas 2019 had nothing to do with either one of the Black Christmases.
Yeah, I heard it was just hot garbage.
Yeah, it was. I'm just saying, like, I can see that's what they're going to do with this, where it has nothing to do with the original Others movie, you know? So I really hope, you know what? I was going to say I really hope that doesn't happen, but I really don't give a fuck. I'm not going to watch it. If I do, it's only to talk shit about it. You know what I mean? I don't have any hopes for it at all. Maybe. Whatever.
I don't got any hopes for it, but hey, maybe it'll surprise us both.
I doubt it, man. But they're also saying, you know, they wanted to do this because of, like, Lee Whannell's The Invisible Man, how that actually, he done, like, really well with it. It's well-received. It's, you know, it's in high regards and shit. And they're trying to do the same thing.
Well, the thing, though, with that one is, like, I think that, I mean, that The Invisible Man, the original, was done a long time ago. Still a really good movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, with this one, it was modernized, and they've done it in such a good way, and the way it was filmed, it was, you know, like, you can't knock it. It was, like, the story was good, the way they filmed it, and then showed did the effects. They thought it out. You know, they didn't just go, hey, this thing is going on, why don't we just do this? You know, this must have took some time to the stuff they wanted to do with it.
Yeah,
they didn't just like throw it all together on the last minute.
For sure. And it's like with The Invisible Man, you know, the original one was good and all, but it wasn't like it had that twist or anything, like anything profound to happen in the movie for them to do it differently to tarnish it all. So that's why, you know, I think that one, it did as well as it did. Because like you said, they just modernized it and told the story better than the original. I don't see how that could happen with the others because it's such a fucking awesome movie. Yeah, so we're not looking forward to that one. Don't go see it. Don't give them your money. Let's protest this shit, Wolfman. Let's fucking, we'll get out in social distance and protest.
you're going to be protesting over at some empty theater since they're all closed right now.
Yes.
Be like, don't go and watch this movie. There's going to be no there but tumbleweeds.
Shit, I was thinking of just making a sign and standing out in front of my yard. That's all we can really do right now. Fuck it. We'll post it all over our social media. Fuck the others remake. All right, that's it for the horror remakes. There was a few, but I couldn't remember what they were. Those were the top three that I really wanted to talk about. All right, you got some fucking birthdays for us?
I got some birthdays for you.
Happy fucking birthday, birthday boy, birthday girl, birthday boy, birthday girl, birthday boy, birthday girl. Be Christ, evil, nice, birthday boy, birthday girl, birthday boy, birthday girl. Happy fucking birthday, boy.
All right, so the first birthday that I'm going to mention is Caroline Williams. And some of you guys might not know who she is, but she's been in quite a few horror movies. She loves the genre. I follow her on Instagram. So what's cool is that she's been, the one that I know her from, the main is Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2. And she was Stretch on that one. So she was one of the DJs. She ends up with the face of one of her friends put on her by Leatherface. Leatherface kind of falls in love with her. So she's on that one. She was on Stepfather 2, and she played Maddie on that one, friend of the lady who becomes the bride of the stepfather. And the last one that I'm going to mention, she's been in a lot of stuff, but the last one I want to mention is that she was in Hanukkah from 2019, and that is Sid Haig's last film that he was in. So I don't know, maybe you want to check that one out. And the second birthday that I want to mention is Kane Hodder. It was his birthday. So, you know, he played Jason on a few Friday the 13th. Yeah, like most people consider him, you know, the Jason Voorhees. So he's been in that. And he's been in a bunch of different movies, a lot of horror movies. So he's also in the movie Hatchet, and he plays basically the main character Hatchet. He also plays the father of Hatchet in the first part, at least. And the last one that I'm going to mention is a movie that I want to review at some point with Paul, Frozen. And that's the Frozen you guys are all thinking about from Disney. We're talking about Frozen from the same director that directed Hatchet, Adam Green. Kane Hodder was in that one, but he played a cameo role in it. So he just had a small part where he was a guy that was operating. Well, what kind of machine was that, Paul?
It's a snow cat.
Yeah, the snow cat.
So happy birthday, you fuckers.
And I want to wish y'all a happy birthday to you. The end.
So that's it for the horror news for tonight's episode. I hope that quenched your thirst and tickled your fancy. All right, guys, before we get into tonight's main attraction, we have a mini spoiler-free review of the short film Box, starring Jimmy Dempster, from 2019. Available on the Kings of Horror Network on YouTube. So I'll just read off the quick synopsis. A man frantically dumps a body after committing an accidental murder. Frightened, he rushes home only to find a large, ominous wooden box on his doorstep. He actually sent the movie to us. Told us to check it out, give our thoughts, and I actually enjoyed it. No, I felt like it was a well-done short flick, man. Only 30 minutes long. I felt it could have been a little bit longer, but what they did I thought was good. There was, a couple of gripes, but You know, Jimmy, he told me that they wanted to make a movie on like a shoestring budget. They didn't want to spend any money on it, and just to see if they could do it. And I think they did it pretty well.
All right, from the Wolfman's opinion on it was, I agree with Paul as far as that that it had enough in there where it left you intrigued, especially in the beginning, where everything is ambiguous. You know, so you're just left with wondering what's going on with, you know, what's going on with this main character. Why is this happening at this moment? And when things, you know, kind of reveal a little bit towards the character in his eyes, you don't, you know, it's shot a certain way where you don't see what's going on. So that's why you're left where you're still wondering still what's going on, even though the main character kind of sees things for himself.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still left as the audience wondering still what's going on and what else is going on to add to this story. So I thought that was done well. I just felt like on some parts of you know, even though it's short and it's only 30 minutes, I felt like in a certain way I can lean towards Paul where, like, yeah, it could be longer to add more things to it. But the reasoning of why they did what they did on filming this, where they said it was done with a shoestring budget, I understand why now on, you know, what they did. I'm judging what's there and it being a short. In my brain, I felt like whoever did the editing on the film, that they should have edited some stuff to cut a few things a little bit shorter. Kind of where certain things were lingering, I felt some things could have been like cut on those parts on some stuff. And I think it might have strengthened the movie a little bit more, in my opinion. But as Paul said, like, it was done well where I still wanted to see what's going on till the end. So I got to say bravo on that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there are a couple of scenes that went on a little bit too long, and they definitely could have cut it, trimmed the fat a little bit. And
just a little bit, you know.
Yeah, just a little bit, and actually took, because if they're looking to do a 30-minute movie, they could have been able to trim some of that and add a little bit more to it.
I hear you on that.
You know,
I kind of like wanted to get like a little bit of character from the little girl.
Yeah.
As well,
yeah. No, I felt the same way. And that's actually like around one of those scenes that kind of lingered long, way too long. We're not going to mention it, but Wolfman knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I felt like that was a, you know, it could have been done a different way.
Yeah.
And it could have been, some things could have been added and detailed on certain parts like that one.
So like I said, Jimmy Dempster, the main character that we follow throughout the movie, I thought his performance was really well done. Other than, you know, some of the scenes that lingered on a little bit too much. But I didn't think that was his fault at all, you know. I think that he did a really good job with the performance and what he was given.
You know, one thing that I did want to add that I forgot to mention now that I'm just remembering the movie a little bit more now too, was there was certain parts where it kind of looked grainy. And I kind of wish like it was shot that way as well.
Oh, you're talking about like the flashback parts where it's like real art housey kind of shit?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, and it kind of looked, I wish that it was like all that kind of grainy stuff right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I agree, because I really enjoyed those parts. And I think that if the whole film was like that, it would have been something else. It would have topped it off.
Yeah, and I think it would look even more like with that shoestring budget right there.
Yeah.
Kind of showing, you know, a little bit more.
Yeah, but all in all, you know, I enjoyed the film. I think it's totally worth the watch. It's only 30 minutes long. You know, what else you guys got to do? Fucking throw that shit on. You can find it on the Kings of Horror Network on YouTube. So it's free. Go check it out. They actually have a whole lot of other movies on there, too, for you guys to check out for free. So that's definitely worth a watch. There's a few other projects that Jimmy Dempster's got going on. One movie that he already finished and it's coming out soon is called The Last One. He didn't give too much information on it, just that they wrapped it up and it's coming out soon. So he'll let us know when that happens, and we'll let you Cripsters know. So another movie that he's got in the works is called Killer Babes and the Frightening Film Fiasco. And I was like, oh, man, that's actually kind of a cool title. I seen one of the posters they got done up, and it looks totally like fucking retro 80s kind of slasher horror kind of posters that you know, those good ones that we love. And it's got a... This is when I was like, oh, okay, I'm kind of on board for this one. He told me the cast list, a lot of familiar names here. We got Lisa Wilcox, and you guys remember her. She played Alice on Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5. We got Tiffany Shepis, and she played Casey on Victor Crowley. And we just mentioned Victor Crowley with Kane Hodder. She also played Maria on Tales of Halloween, which I actually really liked that. It was a really good anthology. Then we have Linnea Quigley. Everybody fucking loves her. Night of the Demons, Return of the Living Dead, Savage Streets, all kinds of fucking shit. And then the last name that he mentioned, Emma Bellamy. And you may remember her as Dollface from Strangers Pray at Night, which I haven't actually seen yet, but I'm sure you Cripsters out there have.
Yeah, so Paul doesn't remember, and neither does Wolfman. Some of you Cripsters might.
So, you know, going by this cast list we got going on, man, like, it might be pretty good, dude. I'm looking forward to it. So, again, definitely check out Box on YouTube, Kings of Horror Network. Follow Jimmy Dempster on his Instagram. Let him know that we sent you. And you got anything else, bud?
I have got nothing.
All right, so let's get on to the main attraction.
So let the sun shine in.
All right, this is going to be our main movie of the night that we're going to be reviewing, and we are basically going scene for scene like we've been doing lately. So notes, don't film me now. We are doing The Autopsy of Jane Doe. This movie was released December 21st, 2016. On to the cast of the movie. So... on the cast, they got a pretty good damn cast from our main characters, the two, which are father and son. We have the Tildens. The father is Tommy, who's played by Brian Cox. And Austin is the son, played by Emil Hirsch. And onto our... other characters that are in the movie are Emma, who plays Austin's girlfriend in the movie, and she's played by Ophelia Levelbond. And we have Sheriff Burke, who is played by Michael McAlhattan. And we have Jane Doe, who's played by Olwen Catherine Kelly. We have Lieutenant Wade, played by Jane Perry. Trooper Cole, played by Parker Sawyers. And we have Stanley the Cat, played by Sydney. And this movie is directed by Andre Uvridal. And this movie is written by Ian Goldberg and Richard Ning. And on to the plot. Where we begin. So we open up the movie and we see Sheriff Burke and Lieutenant Wade, and they find a body that's kind of like half kind of in a grave, where you see the half of it sticking out of the dirt of a female Caucasian, you know, looks about in her 20s.
Who's she?
Well, for now, she's a Jane Doe.
And I got to say, you know, you see like some bodies there. So there's been some kind of strange thing going on, because they mentioned they're talking to each other, saying that they kind of like, it's kind of a head scratcher. They don't know what's going on. It kind of looks like if they were trying to get out instead of like that there was a break-in. So they end up where that goes on. And then we see some nice camera work going into meeting our main characters, Tommy and Austin, where they go into the home. And they go underneath where, you know, they have their business going on, where it's they do autopsies. We meet Tommy and Austin, and they're doing an autopsy with a man who's it's a corpse where there's the the body has been burned. So you see that burned body, and they're trying to figure out the cause of death, which they call the COD. So, you know, they stop for a little bit. They're doing their stuff. They stop. They're talking where they're washing their hands. And Tommy asks Austin about what he thinks the cause of death was.
Cause of death.
How about we skip this part for now?
Come on. This one's a softball.
Smoke inhalation?
You're telling me that the smoke killed Mr. Howard?
Austin mentions that he thinks that it's smoke inhalation. And Tommy's like, really? Like, that they found the body in the kitchen and the exit's about 30 feet away. You know, like, why couldn't he make it out? And he's like, you can't, you know, you got to figure, you know, go into it a little bit more. And, you know, once they do like the internal investigation, they find that there's, you know, a skull fracture. So it falls with the brain. Like they found the brain that was swollen. So they figure that the cause of death was that he fell, hit his head, you know, and he didn't die from the fire where he inhaled the smoke and died. So that's kind of like they talk about that, where they're just there to figure out the cause of death and nothing more. So it's kind of cool. Like when they open up the movie, it's basically kind of like a serious way that they're, you know, that they're doing the autopsies the way, you know, everybody knows how they do them. So while the father and son are talking to each other, the son's mentioning that that he's going to go out with his girlfriend, Emma, and they're going to go watch a movie. And they kind of talk amongst each other, and he's, you know, asking Tommy, his dad, when's the last time he watched a movie? And he's like, that he, you know, the last time that he watched a movie was like quite a while ago. And he's like, oh yeah, the one about like the guy, and he's building the girl a house and she's got Alzheimer's. He's like, oh yeah, The Notebook. And he's like, yeah, I fell asleep like 5 minutes into it, that his wife made him go. So I mean, we don't see the wife and we don't know much about that, but we learn about that later on in the movie. So afterwards, you see Tommy go for a smoke, and Austin is finishing up over inside in the examination area. And Austin gets a present from Stanley, which is the cat. He jumps out of the air ducts, and he's got a nice fat rat for him. So that's how we get introduced to Stanley. And that happens. Austin here, you know, he ends up hearing a noise where it sounds like the elevator, you know, is making some type of mechanical stuff going on. So he heads towards that, and then you know, notices like no one's around. But just off of like off camera, like Emma, which is his girlfriend, jumps in, gives him like a jump scare. So he's scared because he didn't expect her to come down. She was supposed to meet him up front of the house and not inside. And he kind of like ends up where he doesn't want her really into the area where they work. And she kind of, you know, she's interested in the stuff. But Austin kind of doesn't want her there. She's like, well, you know, you've been to my work.
Got to see me at my job. Why can't I see you at yours?
You work in a bookstore.
And then Austin's like kind of talking to her like, well, you know, that she does like, you know, mortuary work, autopsy stuff where it's not pleasant things. And he's like, you know, your job's totally different. They end up going towards where the body, the examination area is at, where they have their drawers with hers with the bodies inside. And she wants to see one of the bodies.
Are these all people?
Just three tonight.
Can I see one?
Well, no, you cannot see one.
Why not?
Because there's some things you can't unsee, okay?
So Austin's trying to show her a certain one, and he pulls one out, And she's like, no, I don't want to see that one. I'll check out the other one, the second one. So they, you know, they get the second one, and that one, it's a body. You see it pulled off, and you notice it's got the cover on it, and then towards where the head's at, it's kind of sunken in, and that area, there's blood there. So, you know, there's something that happened there. And then you see the toe, like when they pull out the body, it has a bell on the toe and it rings. I forgot to mention that Austin was kind of like pleading with her that he didn't want her to show her because some things you can't forget. And he's like, oh, my dad's not, you know, he won't allow it. He's kind of a hard ass. And then his dad's in the background and he's like, try me, like, go, you know, he's telling her, like, go ahead, you know, like he's allowing it. So when they pull out the body, the bell rings and she's questioning, like, hey, you know, why do you got a bell? And then Tommy's mentioning, like, back in the old days that they used to tie a bell to the toes because comatose people that, you know, they used to think that they were dead. So they would tie a bell, and if they were still alive, you would hear the bell, and you know that person wasn't dead and not ready to be buried. So he's a stickler to a tradition. And he's asking questions like, why is the body, you know, covered the way it is? And then, you know, especially on the head. And they're telling her, like, well, like, you know, that he had, it's a gunshot wound victim. So most of the face is missing. And she's like, hey, is it like suicide? And then he's like, well, like Tommy's explaining, like, yeah, well, the way that the gunshot wound's in there, it kind of shows like that could have been, you know, the person committing suicide. And then they're like, but until we went inside and we found strychnine in the system. So the guy was poisoned. And afterwards, whoever killed him, you know, blew the face off to make it look like it was suicide. Tommy mentions, this is basically a direct quote from what he says is, and he kind of mentions that, like, she's kind of like her boyfriend, that he kind of wants to know the why. And he's like, leave the why to the cops and to the shrinks. We're here to find the cause of death. No more, no less. She ends up like reaching for the cover to pull that cover off of the gunshot wound victim. And then Austin tries to, you know, he stops her, like he holds her hand to, like, you know, to stop her from pulling it. And Tommy's telling her, like, no, it's all right, you know, let her go. So Austin lets her go. She ends up trying to pull it. And when she's like reaching to pull it and pulling it a little bit towards, you know, away from the face, Tommy, you hear the bell ring, and she freaks out because she's thinking it's alive. And then like quick second, you can kind of see that Tommy's arm, he's the one that rang the bell. So she was startled all day, you know. The next scene you see is that they end up with Austin and Emma, where they're going towards the elevator, and she's a little bit pissed off from the practical joke that Tommy played on her. And Austin's kind of like laughing at her, like, hey, it's kind of like payback, like who's scared now? And she's like, oh, well, you're not gonna get in that later, you know, when they go to the movies afterwards. And he kind of tries to butter her up, like, hey, even if I do this and that, and then it's like, all right, you know, like, you're lucky you're cute. And right then, when they're at the elevator, Sheriff Burke arrives, coming off the elevator with the body of Jane Doe, and ends up where Austin talks about, like, that the sheriff wouldn't show up unless it was important, you know, at this time of night or afternoon. And he's, you know, like, they were already going to head to the movies, but he says, hey, you know what, I got, like, you know, I got to help my dad. Like, this is, you know, something important going on. And then Emma's like, hey, you're going to ditch me again? So she's a bit upset on that. And he's like, well, you know, like, he has to do it. Like, you know, like, he's talking about, like, there's certain things that happen, like, his dad's alone. So you find out, hey, there's the mom's not in the picture. So she's like, hey, it's been, you know, 2 years that, you know, he should be okay now. And, the you know, it's kind of nice that you kind of see that characterization of Tommy and Austin and the way they have their relationship where, you know, it felt like, you know, really like it's a son and he really cares about his dad. So we get to where the sheriff is showing Tommy evidence and different pictures and talking about what was, you know, what he found at the scene. Usually that they have the coroners, which is Tommy and Austin, show up and see the stuff, but they can do that. When he's showing that stuff in the bodies there, you see Stanley, which is the cat, in the corner. And he's hissing at the body. And Tommy is saying, damn thing gets meaner by the day. So he shoots off Stanley, and the sheriff's telling him what he thinks happened. Ben, which he's saying that there was a guy named Alvarez that was working with Douglas's, which was where Jane Doe was found. And he thinks that Alvarez killed Jane Doe. And he needed a place to dump the body, which he figures that the Douglas's aren't home. So he's going to dig, you know, put the body there. He didn't count on the Douglas's being home and Paul having a .38. He ends up with 4 people dead at the place. So that's kind of like his thinking of what may have happened over there. So Austin shows up over there and, you know, he's talking about like, hey, you know, we didn't get to examine the crime scene. The sheriff's talking about that he needs to figure out what's been, you know, figure out answers to questions. So because the press is going to hound him the next morning. So, you know, he really's got nothing. And he's talking about it, you know, looking like he could breaking and entering, gone haywire. But, you know, like he can sell all the other stuff, but he can't sell Jane Doe being over there. And he needs the autopsy done tonight so we can have more of the holes, you know, in the story that happened over there filled out. So next scene we cut into where the autopsy of Jane Doe begins, and they're videotaping what's going on, and we see Tommy talking about that that it's going to be done in 4 stages. They're going to do an external evaluation, and then they're going to move on to an internal evaluation where they're going to do the heart and lungs, then the digestive system, and lastly the brain. So they talk about that stuff. When they do the external examination, they go into where they're looking, you know, her over on the outside.
No scarring, no distinctive external markings. Hair brown.
And they're talking about how her skin appears normal, like there's no abrasions, there's no bruises, there's no cuts, nothing going on right there where anything weird, you know, out of the ordinary, you know, is there. So everything looks clean on the outside. And they get to where they get to her eyes. And that's the first weird thing that happens in the movie that we see and they see.
Eyes. Gray.
Huh. You don't see clouding like that unless a body's been dead for days.
So they look at, they open, you know, they check out her eyes, and they're clouded. And that doesn't usually happen unless the body's been dead for, you know, quite a few days. But she doesn't look like if she's rotting away yet. They move her arms around, and they're not stiff, so no rigor mortis has set in either. So, that's still going on the external examination. They check out her waist, and her waist is very thin. And Austin mentions that it doesn't seem to, you know, match her body frame. And, you know, that'll come up later on in the movie where they kind of figure some stuff out. So they keep looking through stuff, and Tommy finds that her wrist and her ankles have been broken. But it's kind of weird because there's no bruising on her skin, which Austin notes about that. And afterwards, they examine her nails. They find that there's peat under her nails, which is strange because they said that that peat, like, you know, if she's buried in it, because they find it in her hair and in her nails, that peat is usually found up north. And if you find it where they're at, it's usually found in the nursery. So the next thing they check is her nasal passages and her ears. And Tommy notes that they're clear. And then the next thing that's kind of freaky is Austin opens her mouth. And he finds out that her tongue is cut. So Austin thinks that she might have bitten it off. But Tommy notes it's been cut crudely.
Severed. Crudely. Not surgically.
Well, she could have bitten it off. You know, she ODs on something tensed up.
Bite marks. See? Striations.
So they're kind of putting things together, and Tommy's kind of, you know, he's seen a few before as far as, like, the wrists and the ankles being bound. And he's kind of saying, like, it could lean towards, and the tongue being cut. So he's kind of leaning towards where it could be the human trafficking, prostitution kind of thing going on with Jane Doe.
To keep them from running, cut out their tongues. I'm making too much noise.
I think this was some kind of a prostitution thing.
Can't rule it out.
The next kind of freaky thing that we see is Austin sees the, like, he's got the camera, the video camera, and he's videotaping. And he sees the nostril move a little bit while he's, you know, videotaping that. So he sees the nose move a little bit, and he's, you know, it's kind of taking a back on it. And then there's a little bit of blood that starts trickling out of Jane Doe's nose. And then a fly ends up coming out from it. So it's kind of another strange thing right there. And ends up where Tommy's examining inside her mouth, and he finds a molar missing, and he examines a little bit more, and he also finds that there's a string that he pulls out from inside her mouth, and they find out it's some type of a fabric. So the next part of the examination, Tommy's in the lower area, and he examines where he finds that there's been trauma and cuts to her vagina. And there's no seminal fluid. So that's the external examination that happened. They move on to stage two, which is the internal examination. So Tommy gets ready for to use the scalpel. So he's going to do an incision on her. And as he's going towards to do the incision on Jane Doe, ends up being like a electrical disturbance happens, and the lights start the flickering, and the radio had a certain type of tunes that they're used to having on that you hear towards the beginning of the movie, and then it suddenly, like, changes, and you hear a creepy song go on. It kind of just, it's the song called "Let the Sun Shine In." Kind of weird that Tommy and Austin, they don't figure, like, hey, it's kind of weird that the song just came on out of nowhere, and Tommy just has Austin change it.
Yeah, dude, that song was fucking creepy. I know it's not supposed to be, but it was because of the setting and everything, you know, and it's kind of like an old-timey song. Also, real quick, Cripsters, I'm kind of just letting Memo go. I'm not really chiming in too much because we're dealing with this fucking delay. If I start chiming in and he's still talking and shit, so I figure it's best to just let him go because he's got the scenes down. But I'll chime in here and there.
All right. So Austin changes it, and then they go for the Y incision. Tommy cuts into her, and usually in corpses, they don't bleed out. And when he cuts her, she's bleeding out. So Austin's kind of taken aback by it, like, hey, you know, they don't usually do that. And Tommy's kind of like, oh no, like he's kind of like playing it off like he did before with like the broken wrist and the ankles. That, you know, he's seen it before, but it's usually done, usually happens with a fresh corpse. But he's talking about that, like a corpse that's only been dead for like about an hour or two. And I mean, I don't think she's been dead only that long if she's in a hole and it took a while to get her to get examined. So another strange occurrence right there. And then Austin ends up taking a sample when he, you know, when they cut into her, he gets a blood sample and takes it to the fridge. And he goes back towards where his dad's cutting away and opening stuff up. And when they open up the skin, they're kind of another trippy thing that happens is like there's a they look into the skin. It's kind of not normal on the inside. There's like kind of crustiness going on the inside. And Austin's asking him, is that melanoma? And Tommy's like, well, he's like questioning him like on the inside. And he's like, well, maybe it is. And he gets a sample of that to put in so they can send it to the lab and figure out what's going on right there. So that's, you know, another strange occurrence right there. And Austin takes the sample to the fridge. And then when he goes with that one, there's blood coming out from the bottom of the fridge. So, you know, he starts kind of like, he opens up and then like, there's the blood's coming off of basically every sample that's in there. And the sample they got from Jane Doe is basically draining away. So Tommy's like, hey, you know, like what's going on? He's like, yo, he's like, get your head in the game. And, you know, he's trying to clean up that stuff. So, ends up being where, Tommy says that, Austin was right about the waist, that it's not congenital, about the waist being, you know, too small for her body frame. And, he says that it's due to, like someone that could be wearing corsets for a long period of time. And Austin was like, well, wasn't that like a couple hundred years ago where people stopped, you know, using that? So, you know, another strange kind of thing going on right there with James Doe's body. And then next part is Tommy cracking the ribs open to Jane Doe and her lungs. And when they examine the lungs, they're severely blackened. Austin asks him, like, he wouldn't have taken her for a smoker. Tommy mentions, like, even if she, like, smoked 10 packs a day for, like, 30 years, her, you know, this couldn't have happened. So another strange occurrence right there. So they're blackened the way that they see the lungs and the way in the condition they are. He says that he expected it, you know, if it was in a body that was covered in third degree burns. And he says it's, you know, strange because this is kind of like finding a bullet in the brain with no gunshot wound. So next thing they move on to, they go into the hardened lungs. They examine that. And they find another strange thing is where it looks like they've been cut up. The heart and the lungs, they have like scar tissue on them. More strange things going on as the examination continues. From everything that's been going on, Austin even comments like she should look like if she's mangled or disfigured beyond recognition with these signs that they're finding inside. But she's not. Tommy is like, you know, like from everything that they're finding, he comments, if you want to kill someone, you shoot them or poison them or drown them. There's a million easy ways that you can kill someone. You don't go to these lengths unless you want to make them suffer. And then the next thing that happens is Austin hears a noise, you know, like the elevator, like he heard when Emma, you know, scared him towards the beginning of the movie. So Austin goes out to investigate. Check out what's going on. You know, I'm thinking, it doesn't really say what he's thinking, but in my mind, I'm thinking that he's thinking it's going to be Emma again because he already expected her to come back within 2 hours so they can go out on their date after they're done, you know, with this body. So when they're looking through the hallways, one thing that I didn't mention, but they have those mirrors like they have in the certain department stores or like a Walgreens where like it's kind of like a security mirrors. So you can see in corners. So when Austin's looking, he sees that the mirror, and when he's looking in the mirror, he sees someone standing in the hallway. And to me, I'm thinking that's probably Jane Doe that's there. You kind of get a glimpse, but not a really good glimpse of who it is. So when he turns the corner, there's no one there. Well, next thing we see the scene, and then Tommy's with the body of Jane Doe, and he's kind of asking the body, even though, like, of course, he's not going to expect the response from it. He's just kind of, like, talking to it. He's like, what happened to you? He ends up, like, kind of, like, seeing where he cut where the skin's up, and he sees a little bit of markings in him. So he tries to investigate a little bit more. He ends up cutting his hand. So he goes off to wash his hands off where he's got the cut from the scalpel. And then you hear some rustling in the air ducts. So, you know, Tommy hears it where he's at washing his hands. And Austin also hears it where he's at in a different part of the area. So Austin ends up, like, investigating, and he's opening up the grate of one of the air ducts where he hears the sound coming. And you see, like, the camera shot. It's pretty cool. Like, you see from the inside of the duct, Austin turns his ear towards the hole where the opening's at, and you're kind of thinking something's going to happen there with his ear turned towards that. And then next thing you see is he turns his face towards the opening, and that's when something dashes right past him, and it startles him, and he crashes onto the floor. And Tommy gets there afterwards, and he's asking Austin if he's okay, and Austin's telling him he's fine. And then he gets back up, and he checks the opening again. And that's when Austin finds Stanley in the air duct. But this time, he's hurt really bad. So he's kind of, like, bloody, or he's been injured somehow or cut. And he pulls him out the air duct, and, you know, I know they must have did some kind of in the sound recording, but the way the cat was acting and the sound, you felt bad for the cat, like, you know, like something got to it.
Yeah.
So Austin's, like, holding him, and they both, you know, look really, like, sad. Like, I mean, the cat looks sad, like, because it's like, you know, he's really hurt. You know, Austin holding him is sad, and then Tommy's looking at him, like, in pain too, seeing the cat in the pain that it is. Austin ends up handing Tommy the cat. And he's holding him for a little bit. And then, you know, he has to do what he has to do when he ends up breaking Stanley's neck to stop the cat from suffering. So the next scene, we see him there over at the oven where they do the cremations. So they can't take the cat. And Tommy said, you know, tells Austin he just needs some time alone for a little bit. Because, of course, it kind of hurts him. And then after he puts him in. And then they meet up again. Tommy's talking about how the cat meant a lot because that's he doesn't have too much things left from his wife, from Austin's mom, and the cat was one of those things.
Stanley was a pain in the ass, but he was your mother's, one of the few things a person had left.
Yeah, I missed it too.
Right. Let's keep going.
Let's see. The next part is we're moving on to stage three, where they get into the intestines and stomach. So they get into, they go back to Jane Doe. And once they get into the intestines, they end up finding a flower, which is called a Jimson weed. And they go to a book, and Tommy's checking it out. They figure, you know, they look into it, and they find out that it's a paralyzing agent. And it's common in the Northeast. So it's kind of pointing to where she's from up north, even though her body was found not in that area. So when they find that, we hear thunder outside, and then the radio's going off again out of nowhere. And you hear the DJ guy or news guy mentioning that there's some crazy weather going on where there's wind gust of 60 miles per hour, and they're expecting 3 inches of rain to be coming. So you hear that stuff going on out of nowhere, and Austin starts talking about where he wants to, you know, he's like, hey, you know what, why don't we just finish this in the morning? And Tommy's, you know, disagreeing with him, like, no, you know what, we got to finish this now. That Burke needs this cause of death tonight. And then he's like, when we start something, we finish it. So, and he's like, if you want to leave, leave. So, of course, you know, Austin's not going to leave his dad, especially with all kind of this crazy stuff going on. Even though he really does want to leave, he can't leave him for the, you know, like, you know, he feels kind of guilty about, like, his dad's alone now because of his mom being gone. So, Tommy, they cut in some more, and then the next thing they find is a pouch, and it looks like it's some type of a shroud. So they open up the pouch, they find some kind of weird writing. It's got some Roman numerals and some kind of other type of drawings in there, but they don't figure out what's going on with that stuff yet. Austin, he comments about, like, that the stomach acid should have dissolved that stuff, but it didn't. And when they open up that shroud, they also find a tooth in it. So Austin ends up getting the tooth, and he figures, you know, he puts it onto the mouth with the spot where that tooth was missing on Jane Doe. So he finds out that, hey, that was her tooth. So he figures that, hey, they wrapped it in the fabric and forced her to swallow it. Tommy's talking to Austin and, like, asking him, okay, so what have we figured out so far? So Austin says, hey, we figure out that first they bound her, then they ripped out her tongue, they poisoned her, paralyzed her, forced her to swallow her tooth inside that cloth. And she's got internal stab wounds and burns inside of her, like if something like if she was a human sacrifice.
Someone pulled out her tooth, wrapped it in fabric, and forced her to swallow it.
The drawing...
I don't know, religious, possibly ritualistic.
Oh, let's play that one out.
Every ritual has its purpose.
What ammo have we seen so far?
First, they bound her. Then they ripped out her tongue, poisoned her, paralyzed her, forced her to swallow the cloth. Then the cuts, the internal mutilation, stabs. Then, as if that wasn't enough, they burned her. Like a human sacrifice.
And as far as when they're mentioning that stuff, you hear the radio again, and then it's talking about a flash flood warning going on. You hear that in the background. And Tommy's talking about that you can't kill someone this way without leaving a trace on the outside. So that's kind of what we're saying as the audience too. You know, with seeing that stuff that's going on the inside of Jane Doe, and then seeing how there was nothing wrong with her on the outside. Austin kind of wants to know why she was tortured. Like, what's the reason behind it? And Tommy just mentions again, like, hey, if you can't see it or touch it, it doesn't matter. They just, you know, that they're basically there just to find out the cause of death, and that's it. So we hear the radio once more, and it's talking about that this is not a storm that they want to be caught up in. And if you're home, stay home. Doesn't that kind of sound familiar to Paul? Stay home.
Yeah, I know, right?
What's going on? That's kind of what I thought of when I watched this again.
COVID-19, my ass, dude. There's some supernatural shit going on.
So he mentions that, like, if you're home, stay home. And then the creepy part of it, like the last part that the guy says in this message is, he goes, one thing's for sure. You're not going anywhere. It's like, holy shit, when he says that. So Austin's talking about, like, these bodies are more than cause of death, you know, CODs. That this happened, and all this stuff happened to her for some reason. And then you start hearing the radio go off again, playing that song again, Let the Sun Shine In. Austin's talking about telling his dad, he's talking to him and saying that he thinks that it's time to get the hell out of here. They don't leave just yet. Tommy ends up flaying the skin open to Jane Doe, where they have her, you know, she's already got her ribs cracked open, but this time he's peeling back the skin, like, from where she's cut on the body. So they peel the skin back, and they end up finding writing and pictures inside of the skin, like it's kind of tattooed on her or something. So that's, you know, another strange occurrence right there. And just when they do that, you hear like a crash and the lights kind of blow out, and then they're in total darkness. Austin ends up finding a flashlight, so they got a little bit of light from there. And when they're shining the light, some of the drawers to the where the bodies are at, that they're open and empty. When Tom is there and he sees that, when Austin flashes the light there, and the next thing you hear Tommy say is like, "Let's get the fuck out of here." The generator while they're walking through the hallway with the flashlight, the generator starts working a bit. So they're walking through the hallway, and they got some dim lighting going on. So I don't know. I got to mention one thing right here, like not story-wise. I got to mention that the camera work in this movie and the lighting did on it throughout the movie, top-notch, man.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Getting back to the story-wise, they end up going to, like, there's a certain part where they get to there's a stairway that they have. There's a doorway to go out. It's kind of like when you're in when you see those things and it's a cellar, and then there's a cellar door. So it's one of those type of doors. And they went through it before in the movie, and then this time they can't open it. So Tommy's trying to open it. He's frantic on trying to get out, but the door, he can't push it open. He's saying that the sycamore fell on top of it, so they're trapped. So they end up like trying to get to they're like, let's get to the office. So they're going to the office kind of slow, and then they end up starting to hear footsteps. So they're like, what the hell is that? So they end up running and getting to the office. So they get there and they close the door behind them, and they end up calling the sheriff's station. And when they're calling and trying to get some help, it's staticky, and the sheriff can't make out what they're saying. So, you know, they don't end up getting any help from that. And the next thing, while they're in there, they just hear a bell. It's kind of faint, and it's just getting a little bit louder and a little bit louder because it's getting closer and closer with footsteps. So they're getting freaked out, and us as the audience, so are we. Yeah, so the next thing, like, they hear those footsteps coming, and then there's a crack under the door, so there's a little bit of light coming through there. So Austin goes by the door, and he's looking through that little crack on the bottom of the door, and first there's nothing as the footsteps are coming, and then the freaky part comes with where you see the dead man's foot show up. So it's all like freaky right there.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to figure out what's going on, and then Austin's like, you know what, that this is all because of her. You know, when they cut into her, all this stuff's been going on. He's talking about everything that they found. And then Tommy's talking about that. You're talking about a corpse, you know, like saying, like, you just that use your, you know, common sense, that this can't be because of a corpse, that a corpse can't cause these things that are going on.
What the fuck is going on? It's her. Everything was fine until Brooke wheeled her through that door.
Sam.
Until we cut into her.
You're talking about a corpse.
Austin's kind of like talking to himself, like, we should have left, that he wanted to leave. You see Tommy goes over to wash his hand again. I guess, you know, maybe more blood was coming out from his wound. So he goes into a separate area, like, and, you know, a separate part of that room, not the office, but next to it. So he's washing his hands, and behind him, you see the curtain move a little bit. And then Austin kind of saw it too, but he's in the main office. And then next thing you see is Tommy investigates. He pulls the curtain, and there's nothing there. There's kind of just like some shiny kind of object there. He thought it was Jane Doe's gray eyes. The next thing you see is Tommy gets pulled, and the door closes, and you hear Tommy fall to the floor, and he's getting attacked. Like, you're hearing him scream in pain. And Austin's like calling for his dad, like scared. And then he ends up with the door open, and he gets to his dad, and he finds that Tommy's he's hurt, like his ribs and, you know, are bruised up. So Tommy's mentioning about something about that thing had her gray eyes. And he says that's impossible.
They were gray. Her eyes. It had her eyes.
That's what I've been trying to tell you. It's her.
Oh, that's not possible.
No, her body. Those things we found inside, those were impossible. Whatever the hell happened in here, we are way past possible. It's her.
And then Austin's mentioning to his dad, like he says, hey, all, you know, the things we found inside her and the things that are happening here are impossible. He's like, we are way past possible. It's her. Tommy's talking to his son. He's like, so what do we do? They're trying to figure out what they're gonna, their next step is, what, you know, what they want to do. Next thing we see them, they're going towards the examination room again. So I don't know about you or I know myself, and I know probably Paul, but like rationally, I'd be like, let me get the hell out of here if I could. But I mean, you're stuck. So, you know, maybe we would be doing what they're doing. So that's one thing that I like about the movie is that even though it's horror and, you know, all that supernatural stuff going on, it's kind of like the stuff they'd be doing is kind of logical as well. So it's not like, yeah, this couldn't happen. But if it was happening, logically, you would be doing what Austin and what Tommy are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, that's another part that I liked.
You know, but at the same time, there's been, like earlier in the movie, when stuff starts going down and starts getting real strange, you know, I would like to think I'd been like, you know what, fuck this. I'm out of here. Shit's too real.
Hey, well, remember when we did the Exorcist thing and some of that freaky stuff was going on? We still didn't leave, but if one more thing would happen, maybe we would have.
Yeah, but at the same time, that was I think our imaginations were playing with us a little bit because of, you know, we were doing the Exorcist and shit. But I mean, I'm talking about this kind of strange shit, you know, like if this kind of shit was going on, I would be like, we're getting the fuck out of here, Memo. I'm like, this bitch has tattoos on the inside of her skin, underneath her skin, dude. This is weird. We're out of here.
I'd be like, I left already an hour. I'd be calling you. I left an hour ago. You didn't notice?
well, shit. Even when the cabinet door was swinging open a little bit and Austin noticed that, that would have been enough for me right there. Like, okay, nope, we're gone. You know, he just played it off. Well, maybe we didn't close it all the way.
But yeah, that's what Austin did. He just said, oh, okay, maybe we didn't close it right.
Nope. Fucking gone.
All right. So, the next thing we see them, they're going back to the exam room. So they're going back there. And what's another strange thing, when they get back there, the stuff that they pulled out of Jane Doe, like the lungs and the different parts that they pulled out of her, they're rapidly decomposing. Austin, he comments like, it's like if her body was preserving them. So another strange occurrence right there, to go on to everything else that's been going on. They're talking about that they want to get to Jane Doe's body to the crematorium. So they're talking about it, and then they're like heading towards the door, and the door is locked. They can't get out. When that's going on, they also hear something coming. So they hear, like, you know, the footsteps coming. There's glass to the door where there's an opening where you can see through to the other side. So we see Austin, and he's looking through that glass. And when he's looking through, at a certain moment, you see one of the corpses that we saw beforehand. When Emma was going to look at the corpses before, the first corpse that Austin was going to try to have her see instead of the one with the head blown off, was that corpse, the one that shows up over to that door. So it's, you know, looking all crazy right there, like how we saw it in the drawer. And then, so Austin gets away from that spot after he sees the corpse. And then next, you know, Tommy goes to the door to see it as well, to see it for himself. And then, like, the corpse is, like, opening its mouth with, like, the strings and stuff kind of hanging off of it. So, you know, it's looking all freaky right there. Next thing we see, Austin's like, fuck it. And he gets some flammable liquid and he starts pouring that stuff on Jane Doe. And then Tommy lights up some matches and he throws it on her. So the body lights up, with the flames. But more strange occurrences happen while, the body should just be burning right there on the tray, the spot where they have it. The flames carry up and it gets to the ceiling. So everything's all burning up. And even the video camera that they were, videotaping everything that was going on, that catches on fire as well. Tommy eats a fire extinguisher and puts out the flames. The body was engulfed for, I would say, a good minute, enough for like damage to happen to it. But when he puts out the flames, the flames go down back towards the body and then it dissipates. And when we look at the body, the outside is untarnished. Next thing while they're locked in, they hear an elevator kind of like coming back to life. So you decide, hey, let's get to the elevator so we can get the hell out of here. Well, when they get to the elevator, as they're getting towards it, they hear a bell ringing behind them coming closer. And it's a tense moment because they're getting there and then the door won't open to the elevator and they're struggling to get the door open. And then you just hear the bell just ringing closer and closer. While they're there, Tommy, he grabbed an axe as they get towards that elevator. So they managed to get inside of the elevator, but now they're having trouble closing. They just hear the that bell getting closer and the corpse getting closer. And at a certain point, you can even Tommy and Austin, they both see the corpse as it's approaching. Tommy, he pulls Austin to the side and he takes a swing, the corpse, and the corpse goes down. Next thing we hear is we hear gurgling. So Austin goes to investigate and he sees that it's not the corpse at all, that his girlfriend Emma's on the floor bleeding out with the axe sticking out of her. She's dead. He's like, he's, losing his mind, crying. And I got to say, awesome job, with the acting right there because, gut-wrenching right there for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Tommy goes up to him and he thought it was a corpse as well. And when he sees what Emma did on the floor, all his reaction was he's like, oh, my God. You can tell, when he was playing along with Emma, and he did that practical joke with her. He liked her, and he could tell that he liked them for his son.
Yeah.
So,
and they didn't know that was her at all. Like they had no idea. So that shock of seeing her there dead was like, holy fuck! And we felt that too because it was kind of like a what the fuck moment. Like what just happened? Where did she come from? Yeah. Kind of shit. So we kind of felt the same way.
I felt the same way as you, Paul. Even though we've watched it numerous times, it's still it still hits you.
Yeah.
Because it was done so well, the way it was shot and the acting. And the gore, too, with the axe there and the blood. It looked good for what it was.
Yeah, it was a really good scene.
Tommy pulls Austin into the elevator, and, they got to get out of here. The power starts going back on. So they start going up for just, a couple seconds, and then it gets stuck again. The power goes out. So they're kind of stuck there in darkness, and Austin's kind of blaming himself. He's, talking about how he told her to come back for him, in 2 hours.
I told her to come back for me. I told her to come back.
No, you didn't do this. You shouldn't be here.
And Tommy's like, you didn't do this, that, you shouldn't have been here, you shouldn't be here, and that all of this is my fault. So Tommy's, blaming himself, that everything that's going on is because of Tommy's fault, because he should have just been doing this all by himself, and they should have been out on their date. And Austin's like, you couldn't have known, and Tommy's like, that's what everyone told me about your mom. And he starts talking about, you know, his wife and Austin's mom. And he mentions her nickname that he had for her. And he used to call her Ray, Ray of Sunshine. Because when he, you know, she always used to have a smile in her face and a sunny disposition.
You know why I used to call her Ray? Ray of Sunshine. She thought it was corny as shit.
She talked about how corny it was, but, you know, it ended up sticking. And he goes, you know what, if he knew what he knew, you know, knows now, which is too late, that he would have helped her if he did. But he had no idea what type of pain and unhappiness that she was going through. Because, like I said, she would always show that smile on the outside. So he's talking about like all his mistakes that he's made in his past that Austin always had to pay for them. So you know, he's feeling guilty. And then the next question Austin's got is like, why hasn't she killed us yet? Meaning Jane Doe.
Yeah, I know, huh?
And Austin's like, each time we cut into her, she kept trying to stop us. And that's the first thing is like when they're going to do that incision, that's when all that strange crap was going on. That's when we first hear that radio that was going on. She says, it's like something she doesn't want us to find. If we can figure out how she died, maybe we can figure out how to stop her. Tommy's like, you want to go back in?
You want to go back in then?
If we stay here, we're dead. If we could just figure out how she died, maybe we can figure out how to stop her.
The next thing is that they head back. But before they head back, they cover Emma's body. They get outside of the elevator. They cover Emma's body with a cover, like a blanket. And while that's going on, you kind of see like the camera pans to Jane Doe where she's at. And of course, she's not moving. She's just a corpse. But then the camera next pans over to where the incinerator's at. And it turns on, and then smoke starts forming. And when we see the next scene where Tommy and Austin are heading towards the exam room, the hallway's getting filled with smoke. So Jane Doe is making it hard for them to get back to the body. Yeah, so as they're heading back, it's hard for them to see, so they get a little bit separated. And we hear that, you know, Tommy's kind of screaming out in pain because he's getting attacked by some kind of presence. And then he falls to the floor, and we see him down on the floor. And off to the side, we kind of see either a figure, and it's either a corpse or it could be Jane Doe. I don't know what you took of it, Paul, but I don't know. I don't know if it was Jane Doe or the corpse. What you think?
I think it was the corpse. I think Jane was laying on that table that whole time.
All right, even in that hallway scene where Austin saw something in the mirror?
Yeah, I think it was just, you know, whatever this entity was, whether it be her or whatever, it was taking forms of all kinds of different shit. All
right, so, I mean, but I think in the hallway, I think that one was Jane Doe.
It could have been her, but I don't know if it was her form, like her body. I'd like to think her just there on the table the whole time, you know what I mean? The body, anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just a split second kind of thing where it's like hard to make out, and even if you pause it, you still can't make it out, man.
Yeah, the reason I'm thinking that it wasn't her, because if you're thinking that it is, then that means that she would have got up and walked over there, or whatever, or you know, went over there physically. But the whole time, you know, she's not able to move; she's essentially dead. The body is, you know, so that's why I'm thinking something else. Yeah, or so you think. But even then, like, she's stuck in her body.
Yeah, so they end up they get together, and they end up making it back into the exam room. They get into the next step, the last step of the autopsy. They cut into the back of her head, pull that flap open, and they cut the skull cap and open that up, and they find the brain, and to them they say that it, you know, it appears normal. So they cut a little sample from it, and Austin looks through the microscope, and he's freaked out by what he sees. So the next thing we see is Tommy goes over and checks it out, and then we see a picture of it on the screen where you see the cells are active, where they're moving around. Tommy's like, okay, so now we figure it out why we couldn't find out the cause of death. She's still alive.
That's why we couldn't find cause of death. She's still alive. Alive. We lit her on fire. We took out her heart.
And Austin's like, how could she still be alive? That, you know, that they cut into her.
Yeah, they took out some of her organs and everything.
Yeah, they took out her heart. They lit her on fire. She's still alive somehow. And then Tommy is just talking about, like, how there's some type of energy that's keeping her going. And then Austin gets back to where he's examining the shroud again. And then he finds something more into it. Like, he turns it a certain way. And he finds where it looks like it's writing, where it says Leviticus 20:27 from the Bible.
Leviticus 20:27.
And Austin's checking it out some more, and he's seeing some Roman numerals. And he's mentioning, like, if these Roman numerals are correct, he's mentioning the year 1693. And Tommy's going through his Bible, looking up Leviticus 20:27 to figure out what that says. And when he does look it up, what it says is any man or woman who consults the spirits of the dead shall be put to death, for they are. And then it kind of cuts off at that point. And then Austin gets back to what he was looking at, and he's like, 17th century. And then he's like, Northeast. And he's like, New England. He's like putting everything together. So the part from Leviticus that gets finished up was that they are a witch, and their blood shall be on their own hands. Tommy's like still kind of trying to be logical about everything. He's like, that witches are a myth. And then Austin's like, you can't keep denying. And Tommy's like, there were no witches in Salem, that they were just kids. They were young girls. They're all wrapped up in hysteria. They were just everybody pointing a finger to the next person and the next person and the next person. But they were all innocent. Tommy's like that. They didn't hang her or burn her at the stake, that they tortured her mercilessly. And then Austin's talking about that the ritual didn't work.
Kids, young girls, falsely accused, wrapped up in hysteria. One pointed to the next, who pointed to the next. But they were all innocent.
Tommy mentions, which is like, I'm kind of saying what they say, just because if I don't say it, it kind of loses out on a lot of meaning of what happened in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy mentions, what if the ritual performed on an innocent actually created the very thing they were trying to destroy? Everything they did to her, everything we did to her, she can feel it. She wants us to feel it too. That's why she's keeping us alive. This is her revenge. This is her ritual. Austin's like, but why us? And Tommy's like, why the Douglases? Why anybody? We were in her path, and we're just stops along the way. He's talking about that those who survived got rid of her and buried her far away as possible. Austin's like, that hasn't stopped her. Tommy's like, because no one got close enough. No one could see what we have seen. She's still suffering, and it won't stop. It won't stop until he's cut off there. We never find out what he's saying, what he says, but we get the meaning later on. Austin's like, until what? And then we hear banging on the door. That's Jane Doe trying to stop him again. So Austin goes to the door to brace it as something's banging on trying to get in. So Austin's trying to stop whatever evil entity is trying to come in. And Tommy's just left there with Jane Doe's body, and he's talking to her. And he's telling her that he's not going to fight her, but he just doesn't want her to hurt Austin. He's like, please don't hurt him. Let me help you. And as he's saying that, you just see the body there, and like something's going on. And the music, the way it plays, you know that something more is going on right there. You see, the next thing we see is that Jane Doe's transferring the pain that she went through to Tommy's body. And you hear Tommy, like, you know, in pain. And it kind of looks like if he's having a heart attack by the groans that he's making. So he's in some type of pain. And Austin's going towards them, you know, worried about his dad. And Tommy turns around. And the next thing you see is his wrist and his ankles just snapping. Next shot that you see in the scene, you see Jane Doe's, with her body, the bones are going back being mended. And as more things are going on with Tommy, like he's getting more torn up. Every pain that she's gone through, he's going through it. And as he's getting the pain, she's getting repaired as far as her body, like the incisions. You see the incisions kind of closing up, and the lungs are healing up and becoming healthy and unblackened. And as that's going on, you see smoke coming out of Tommy's mouth. Her eyes become they're not cloudy anymore. They come whatever color they were in life. And as that's going on, Tommy's eyes gray up and get cloudy. And Tommy's on the floor in pain, you know, just getting torn up. And Austin's just on top crying, you know, trying to hold his dad and crying for him because he knows he's going through all that pain that she's gone through. And you see a scalpel, you know, just close to Tommy, and he's reaching for it, but he can't get to it because he's, you know, all torn up and with broken ankles and broken wrist. Finishes them off basically like the cat by plunging the scalpel through Tommy's heart. So when he's doing that, he's crying over his father's body. The power goes back on throughout, you know, through everything. Like it was in the beginning before all this strange stuff was going on. Austin can hear Sheriff Burt calling out to him. So Austin hears that, and it's kind of crazy because when that's going on and you hear that, you kind of feel like if things are gonna kind of get back to normal, and that Austin saved. And everything's going to be all right in the beginning, at least for Austin. And it still won't be Austin paying for Tommy's mistakes, even though they're, you know, human mistakes. Anyone could have done them. So, yeah, he hears Bert calling him. So he ends up going towards that that spiral staircase. And he can't open. He gets to the doorway and he can't get to it. There's, like, you can hear the saw sounds going on the opposite side. So, you can hear, you know, while he's doing that, he's saying that he can't get in, you know, he can't get out. Sheriff Burke is just like telling him, just open up the door now. And he's like, it's stuck. And he's like, try again, son. He's like, it should open up now. And then he's like, open up. And he's like, I can't. And then it gets creepier there because he's like, open up. And he's like, starts saying, open up your heart and let the sun shine in.
No, I'm trying, it's stuck. I can't.
Open up.
I can't.
Open up your heart and let the sun shine in. So let the sun shine in.
So Austin's fucking scared out of his mind right there, because he knows that this is not Sheriff Burke anymore, and shit's still going, you know, hitting the fan right there. So he's backing up, and he hits the railway of the staircase with his back, and then he hears a bell. So he turns around, you know, thinking that the corpse is going to be there, and he doesn't see anything there. He turns back around to check what's going on, and when he turns around, that's when we just see a glimpse of his dead dad, Tommy, in front of his face, just out of nowhere. Austin freaks out, flails his arms, and goes backwards, and he crashes through the railway, falls backwards, and breaks his neck. The next scene that we see is it's morning, and the police are already there going through the procedures that they go through. And we see Austin's corpse right there, and Sheriff Burke's over it. And we see in the back that there's some different people there doing their job, examining different stuff in the area. Next we see Sheriff Burke. He goes to the exam room. We see Tommy on the floor with a scalpel through his chest. And his eyes aren't clouded anymore. So that's something right there that I observe when I paused it. We hear Lieutenant Wade. She's there, and you know, she's talking to Burke about different things, and she's telling him there's no signs of forced entry. She's talking about it looks like he, and then Burke cuts her off. He's like that he's known this family for 20 years, and whatever it looks like, that ain't it.
No obvious signs of forced entry. Looks an awful lot like you.
I've known this family 20 years. Whatever it looks like, that ain't it.
Well, it's going to be another nice one out there. Today's our fourth straight day of sunshine.
And then we hear the radio cut in again, and it's talking about, like, this is the fourth straight day of sunshine. Another stranger thing going on right there, because when we were with Tommy and Austin, there's talking about a storm and everything going on. We hear the thunder and that crash of the tree blocking them in. So, strange right there. So we see Jane Doe. It kind of pans over to her. And what's crazy with that, after everything that we saw in the movie, is that her body is still in the... in the state that it was in the beginning of the movie, where the eyes are still clouded and, with the broken ankles and the broken wrist. So it's like if nothing happened. So Sheriff Burke and Lieutenant Wade are talking, and Lieutenant Wade's asking, what do you want to do with her here? Get her the hell out of my county. He's like telling her, take her to VCU. And he's talking about Lit. So he's like, Lit Ward Layman, deal with her. Next thing we see is James Doe's body goes into one vehicle. And it's covered with a white sheet as it goes in there. And then we see from the house, two other bodies are going out in body bags. And that's going into another vehicle. So the last scene we see is... it goes with the vehicle that the Jane Doe's body's in, and Trooper Cole is in that car driving it, taking it to the other county that they were talking about. And as he's driving, he's having a conversation on the phone, and he has got the radio station on. It's kind of like kind of churchy kind of station or whatever. And then all of a sudden, it just switches, and then that Let the Sunshine In song goes on, and slowly it pans over to Jane Doe's body in the back, you know, lifeless, of course, right there. She's a corpse, and it's got the white sheet over her body, and the camera does a close-up towards her feet, and we see her feet. There's a toe tag on her right foot, And, you know, we see that there's no bell on her feet. So, you know, that's one thing right there. So the toe tag's there. And while it's in the close-up, we see the big toe of her left foot wiggle. And we, as the audience, we hear the bell, even though there's no bell there.
The word of God is powerful.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. Yep, so you know, yeah, it's not over. Sequel? Sequel, anyone? I don't even know if I'd want to see a sequel of this.
Maybe. To me, I mean, this movie was done so well, the way it was shot, the way it was acted, the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Man, when it was, the way it was presented, I like the way it was presented because in the beginning, it just felt like this could be like a real crime drama thing going on with it, super realistic, and then later on it gets all like with the supernatural stuff going on at that certain point, and it still got the realistic feel to it still, but with all that craziness going on.
I totally agree. Like you had that realism, the way that they were doing their examination, making sure they got everything right. I'm looking at things, you know, a completely different way, especially with Tommy because he's more experienced. And you got that feel with Austin, you know, he's there learning. And then you get that supernatural shit coming in, and it's like, holy fuck, and neither one of them know what to do.
Yep, and then I like the way they played out the characters, and they were just done so well. You know, they just feel like, you know, real people. And you can empathize with all of them.
Yeah, the character development was done very well for, you know, the limited time going on in the actual movie. You know, this is only a few hours on that one night. They gave just enough backstory with Tommy to show why he was feeling, you know, distraught and everything about things going down towards the end of the movie. Even the relationship with Austin and Emma, you know, you could tell they really liked each other, all this and that. And she was only there for a little while. Yeah, so like me and Memo were having a debate earlier before we started recording about Emma. I was just mentioning that I wish that they didn't kill her and that she was like a figment, another illusion of a Jane Doe, you know, how she was doing with the corpses and shit. You know, Memo was like, well, did she really die? Was she really there? And at first I was thinking, you know, I thought I saw, you know, just a little bit of a foot towards the end when the examiners were in there and he was knelt down looking at something in that same area where she was dead, where her body fell. There's not enough to show that she was laying there, like, at all. So at the last time you saw her body laying there, that was the last time you saw her at all. She wasn't mentioned at all for the rest of the film until, all the way to the end. They didn't go back to her at all. You kind of have to assume that she was really there and she really did die. It's just maybe a fault on the editing or they forgot about her. I don't know, when they were making the movie, to go back and kind of explain what happened with her. Because at the end, when they're bringing out the body bags and everything, they put Jane Doe in the car and they bring out two body bags. So that's Austin and Tommy. And then they leave. That's it. So you're like, wait, what the fuck happened? Why didn't they bring out Emma's body? And that's where I can kind of get what Memo was saying, was like, maybe she really wasn't there and she really didn't get killed, but they didn't show us as an audience what actually happened to her. So we have to assume that she did get killed. So why did they leave the body?
I still got to disagree with you, Paul. We're still debating. I believe that she is alive, that was a figment of what was going on, that Jane Doe, you know, was fucking with him, and that Emma's still alive, because when she left, she was, you know, it was a, either like a 50-50 shot that she was coming back. You know, of course, I would think that, yeah, she was coming back the way their relationship was and the way you saw them was that she would be coming back logically.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like all the clues that are there, I think that she, you know, that she's still alive, that that was just Jane Doe messing with them. Because with everything that shows, like I said, when they're examining the spot and then where her body should have been at, I didn't see it there in the scene. And them leaving with just the two body bags there and then Jane Doe in the other car, that wouldn't make any sense. They'd have to have three body bags come out.
No, I totally agree with you.
And Jane Doe's there. So in my, like, logically, I don't, you know, I don't think she came back. But I mean, as far as me, like, also logically thinking, yeah, I would think that she would have come back, and that could, you know, that they would have, you know, that unfortunately that she would have been dead because of Jane Doe making it seem like that corpse was coming for him, but it was actually Emma in that area, you know, messing with their psyche. But like I said, I'm going to say that Emma's still alive. That was Jane Doe messing with them, because from the evidence at the end, I don't see that there's no body of Emma. But I, you know, I get what you're saying too, but that's kind of where I'm leaning myself.
What is it that I'm saying? Because it's funny that you're saying you have to disagree with me when I didn't say that, you know, I think that she was there 100%. I actually said the opposite. There's no definite proof that she was there at the end of the movie.
You're saying that, no, but you're, yeah, kind of, but you're saying that you think that she's actually dead.
No, I said that the way that they portrayed it in the movie and they did the scenes, that they kind of made us have to assume that she was, because they never went back to her. I don't think that it was her, if because of the there was only two body bags and then...
Oh, okay. Well, I thought that you said that you thought that she was dead.
No, there's no, they never went back to it. That's why I'm like, they should have shown them bring her body out too. If that's what they want us to assume, that she was dead. And if they didn't, if they want to go on that side, because think, oh, well, then she probably wasn't really there. They should have let us know that she wasn't really there.
I like the way it was presented. And like, I even like where we have that little questionable part right there, where it's a little bit of debate to it. And even with like the corpse stuff and like the little corner of your eye kind of things, that's some of the intriguing parts of this movie, and what makes it enjoyable to rewatch this movie. Because like me and Paul, we've been trying to do it. You know, we were trying to do this maybe like about a week or two ago, but we couldn't get to it, so we're doing it now. But having to, you know, do it, we watched it many times for this show. But unlike other movies, no matter how many times I've watched it, I still enjoyed watching it.
Yeah.
I've
seen it like six times, and, dude. I watched it when it first premiered on Netflix, and I've watched it a bunch since then.
Yeah. And same here. I think it probably came out like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Not too long ago. So I kind of saw it when it was pretty new off on Netflix myself. And yeah, I enjoyed it back then and still enjoy it now. Enjoyed talking about this one. Everyone did a good job on as far as acting too. I mean, the actors, the main actors, top notch right there. I don't know what movies you've seen them in, Paul, but...
Emile Hirsch? I've seen him in a bunch of shit, dude. He's good. Alpha Dog, yeah. He was in Into the Wild.
What? Yeah, that's the main one that I know him.
Yeah, from. He's fucking great.
Wild, and yeah, from that one, I'd say like he was awesome on that one. I was like, oh shit, it's him. And I mentioned like Brian Cox, like he's been in a bunch of good stuff. Awesome actor.
Oh yeah.
And the one I know him from, even though it was a small part, is Braveheart, playing William Wallace's uncle.
I remember him in Running with Scissors. That was a good one. You seen that one?
I haven't seen Running with Scissors.
You got to see it, dude. He plays just like this weirdo, and like one of the things that like really stands out is he talks about his masturbatorium, where it's his room dedicated mm-hmm. to masturbating. I was like, what the fuck? I got to get one of those.
What do you mean, get one, Paul? Don't you have one?
No, it's not set up yet. Okay, so we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to get into my rating real quick. There's a lot of things about this movie that make it stand out among a lot of the horror flicks to come out in recent years. It's original. I've never seen anything like it as far as a storyline. The acting was fucking top notch. The effects were so good. Like, they're so realistic. When they're cutting up her body, it looked real, you know?
And the crazy thing is that it is actually played by an actual actress.
Yeah, like, she's there the whole time. Like,
yeah, I mean, of course, when they cut up, you know, into her, it's
well, yeah,
a big part.
Yeah. Well, I hope so.
She's no longer with us.
That's dedication right there.
Cut me up.
Absolutely love this movie. It blew me away the first fucking time I watched it. I've never seen anything like this. And you know what? It's actually kind of scary at times too, man. I was watching it again the other day for the podcast and, you know, I jumped a few times and it wasn't just because of the cheap jump scare kind of shit. You know, it made me feel like uneasy. The setting, it's basically all in their basement where they have it all set up for their morgue and everything. It's just creepy. Got this fucking atmosphere going on. Claustrophobic at times, you know, when you start thinking about they're in the basement and they can't get out. It's like, what the fuck, man? Really good fucking flick. So I'm going to get into my score. I give this shit a 9.5. Love it, love it, love it.
I think that's the highest score that you've given a movie that we reviewed so far.
I think so.
All right, and on to my score. And, I mean, we already mentioned some of the stuff already, and then we already talked about the acting, the way it was shot and directed, and the storyline. Everything, man. Top-notch stuff, for sure. Not many faults. I mean, Paul found a little bit of fault here.
Yeah, like, and that was thing. Just a tiny bit.
Yeah, with me, I kind of enjoyed that and all the different things they put into it. So mine's going to be kind of short and sweet because everything that Paul said, I have to concur on all that stuff. And yeah, when I first saw that, blown away as well. On to the numerical score for me. We have matching scores.
All right.
9.5.
Fuck yeah. Such a good fucking flick.
Cripsters, if you have not watched this movie, this is one that you're missing out on for sure. It's a must watch. Not miss out.
Nope. Fucking go watch that shit right now. Wait till the show's done and then go watch it.
And one last thing before we go away, I want to ask a question of Paul. Was there enough gore for you in this movie?
Yeah, there was. There wasn't a shit ton of it. It wasn't fucking Evil Dead kind of gore or anything like that. But, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of characters involved. So I felt there was enough gore. And the gore we saw was so realistic and so well done that, yeah, dude, like, it was great.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the, I don't know, my favorite part. I love the whole movie, but one of the most outstanding parts of it that stood out to me as far as, like, the effects part was and painful to watch too, like every time I see it, even like with all these numerous times that we watched it, was when Jane's throwing all that pain and all that suffering into Tommy, and then you just like see all that stuff going on with him and the acting that mm-hmm. he had to do
mm-hmm.
and then you see his wrist snap right there, you see the bones, you know.
Yeah, that was that was cringeworthy right there, dude. Like, oh yeah, shit.
That his eyes is clouding over and then the smoke coming out of him. Top notch stuff. And the music in that the movie was awesome as well too. Like when you get to the creepy stuff, it gets like tense that the music just adds to it.
So Chainsaw Paul says, go check it out.
Wolfman Memo says, ow.
That's his seal of approval right there. All right, man. I had a fucking great time as usual.
Yeah, me too. And it's late as hell.
But, yeah, it is.
I'm all energized up.
Yeah, dude, it's almost fucking 4 o'clock in the morning. Holy shit. But we're doing it for you, Cripsters.
It's 4 a.m. and Paul's looking for the porn.
I'm looking for the bed. I'm going to go night-night.
Wait, but before that, we got one last message for you.
We jumped on the bandwagon, guys. We joined the fairly new social network app for all us horror hounds. The Slasher app combines some of the great features of Instagram and Twitter and stitches them together to make an awesome app dedicated to horror lovers like us. Post pics, make comments and messages, all the good shit you'd expect and more. Meet and chat with like-minded horror fanatics. The Slasher app is available on Apple and Android. So join the massacre today. And be sure to follow us at podcast-from-the-crypt. That's a lot of fucking dashes. Our last little unsponsored commercial here. We got an awesome store for you maniacs to check out. Creepy Horror Company at creepyhorror.com. They have tons of original horror-themed and horror movie-inspired merch, from t-shirts to hats, coffee mugs, fucking all kinds of shit. Head over to their site and enter the shed to check out all their awesome fucking stuff. Oh, and be sure to enter promo code CREEPY10 to get 10% off your entire order. That's fucking dope. So Chainsaw Paul says go check them out. Alright, thanks for hanging out with us. Have a good night and stay creepy. That was lame.